Hey everybody, I'm C.
I'm Jen.
And you're listening to Tom, Tit, and Baobab.
Welcome back to Tom, Tit, and Baobab, the New York Times Spelling Bee-inspired podcast that's all about words, word games, and the word nerds who love them.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, dear Beatrice. Happy birthday to you. 6 years, man.
Can you believe our little Beatrice is elementary school aged?
Listeners, in case you do not know, we are talking about the fact that the digital edition of the New York Times Spelling Bee debuted on May 9th, 2018. So this week marked Beatrice's 6th birthday.
Thank you, Leslie, and the Spelling Bee Facebook page for alerting us to this special occasion.
Hey, you know what else is, well, not this week, I guess, Sunday, yeah. May 12th is...
Mother's Day! Happy Mother's Day to
Mother's
you,
Day.
Happy Mother's Day to
happy,
you.
Happy Mother's Day to you. We're both moms, some of human children and some of fur children, and we both have mothers.
This is true.
So what are you doing for your mother on, because I assume that Keats is not doing anything that exciting for you for Mother's Day.
What? Are you kidding me? Keats is going to let me walk him three times on Mother's Day.
Let's
He's going to let me play food with him and feed him. And yeah, exactly.
You know what? My kids will also let me feed them and walk them. So we're right in sync.
Perfect.
I have told the children many a time that there better be a plan, and I'm pretty sure the plan is going to be no plan, and I get to drive them to their various things.
You will be doing motherly things on Mother's Day.
I will at least be, near my children, I hope, on Mother's Day, or watching them play soccer and other things like that.
Well, so, happy Mother's Day to you, and happy Mother's Day to all the mothers who are out there listening.
You know, I was thinking that we are silly and should have had our mothers on this week on the show. So spoiler alert, people, we don't have our mothers on, mostly because we are bad daughters and didn't think about it.
Yeah, but we've had our mothers on recently, you know, in consecutive weeks.
That's one of my favorite things about doing the podcast is like including our mothers in it.
Speaking of doing the podcast, we maybe should actually wrap this up or else we're still going to be talking on Mother's Day.
All right, let's do it. It's time for the Week in Beats.
This is the part of the show where we talk about bees from the previous week. Today, we're starting with Saturday, May 4th, and ending with Friday, May 10th. See, how'd you feel about the bees this week?
How'd I feel about the bees this week? Well, Baobab was in this week, so that's always a good thing.
Right? Always a good week.
Yeah, Tuesday, May 7th. And that was also a day that included barf.
Love it.
Boffo.
Yeah, boffo's a good one. And?
And bollard, which is a word I now know, which makes me very excited.
Don't you find it weird that now every week bollard is in the puzzle?
Well, maybe it was before and we just didn't
know. No, because we would have gotten it or we would have seen it and talked about it on the show.
Maybe. All right. And you know what else was in that day? Roll bar. What did you think of roll bar, Jen?
We've talked about roll bar before because the first time it was in the puzzle, I was like, what? What the heck's a roll bar? And you were like, of course, roll bar is a word.
Well, what's weird, now I know what I said roll bar was before because I know what I thought roll bar was or I had a feeling about roll bar.
It's in a car.
Yeah. Then we got a message this week from listener David. His dad was known as, quote, Dr. Seatbelt. So his dad, who was a physician, helped pass New York State's seatbelt law. Isn't that cool?
So cool.
Yeah. And in their cars, they not only had seatbelts, they also had roll bars because his dad was like, that is the way to be safe. So he said, whenever he thinks of roll bars, he thinks of roll bar seatbelt as like one word.
It's a very good story. And it's nice that he was reminded of his dad.
And that his dad was so cool. Very nice.
Yeah. Dr. Seatbelt.
Another word on May. Sorry to just stick with one day. But also bread was on May 7th, which is another one of those words that I did not know before the bee. And now it's like, of course, bread. Everybody knows the word bread.
Remember we had a big fight over it? the first time we ever talked about it, because I was like, everybody knows bread. And you said, no, everybody doesn't.
And would you like to define bread?
It's one of those, like, it's like a push thing that you put through papers that you, and then you unfold. It's like a fastener. A fastener is a bread.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so I like that the bee is teaching me. I'm learning from the bee.
Hi. You know what? I was also feeling like I learned from the bee this week, because on Wednesday, May 8th, there were three words, mirin, nori, and roti, none of which I knew before the bee, all food words.
This, oh, but you've known them before this week because they're in there all the time.
No, I knew them before this week, but I didn't know them before the bee, before we started doing the bee. So this week I was like, oh my gosh, I've learned so much about food doing the bee.
And Primo, which, you know, is a hoagie company. And Colcannon. Did you know that?
I haven't gotten that yet because I haven't finished today's puzzle.
Oh, sorry to be a spoiler, but hey, you should have done it before we taped.
I got to genius before we taped.
Can I tell you one more thing about Friday, May 10th that I hope you will not mind? Actually, I have a couple things about today, Friday, May 10th.
Yeah, go ahead.
Knock was in here again. N-O-C-K, which made me think, how many times had it been in there and I just hadn't paid any attention to it?
I don't think it has been.
I feel like K-N-O-C-K had been there a lot. And if K-N-O-C-K
Maybe knock didn't count before N-O-C-K.
Housekeeping, Jen.
Yep, housekeeping. Because I have to tell you, I put together our list of all the B words every week, and then I review the list to figure out what we're talking about. So I feel like I would remember it if it had been there.
Okay. And for those who don't remember, knock is like the notch in archery, which is weird. Mm-hmm. Also on May 10th, lacuna, which is in there all the time. So I got lacuna, and then I was like, oh, the other word, the word that I know, that I've known for so many years, that I actually knew before the B. Lunula, which is the like little, you know, moon-shaped thing on your fingernail. And you know when your brain just doesn't work?
Yes.
And I'm like, I know this word is in here. I know what this word means. I finally had to look up, what is the half moon shape on your fingernail called?
So what you're saying is that there was a lacuna in your brain.
Yes. But it was so funny. I was like, in my head, I just kept calling that the lacuna, even though I knew that was not what lacuna meant. I knew lacuna meant gap. And it was just like, oh my God, what is that word? It was driving me crazy. All right, just had to admit to my stupidness.
It's all the lunula lacuna. Now you won't forget it.
Yes.
There was a word on Thursday, May 9th that was the last word that I got. And I guessed it. Okay. And then I looked it up and I was like, wait, is this just an easy word that I somehow in my life don't know? And that was dandling.
What is dandling?
D-A-N-D-L-I-N-G.
What does that mean?
It is the gerund form of dandle, D-A-N-D-L-E, which means to like bounce something on your knee, like a kid.
I had no idea that that was a word.
Nor did I. Not only is it a word, it is in a song by Queen, Good Company.
Which goes?
I don't know. Let's play some of it and try not to get sued. Yeah, my friend Andrew told me about that, and I had never heard it before, and now I know Dandel and that Queen song.
So wait, define it again. What does it mean?
It means to like bounce something on your knee.
I'm not sure.
Here's the Oxford Languages definition. Move a baby or young child up and down in a playful or affectionate way. He dandled his son on his knee.
What? What?
You could also move something lightly up and down. Dandling the halter rope, he gently urged the pony's head up.
Is this a word you had ever heard before?
No, I told you it was my last word and I totally just mashed it.
Oh, I don't know about this one. I'm going to have to think about whether this is reasonable or not. My mother's either yelling like, Cecilia, you're an idiot, or she...
I think your mother's probably yelling, Cecilia, you're an idiot, and Jen as well. She's probably yelling at both of us right now. And my mom, too. My mom is like, of course, scandal is a word.
You didn't ask her?
No, I forgot to ask her.
All right, moms, we need to know, is this vintage vocab? Is this literary? Or is this just a weird word? I got another weird word from that same day, from May 9th.
Which is what?
Did you know lading?
Yes.
Why did you know that word?
Lading, I know because I don't know. I just know it.
Do you know what it means before you looked it up?
I already looked it up to make sure.
And you knew that it was the action or process of loading a ship or other vessel with cargo?
Yeah, because it's like laden. It's like related to laden.
Well, it's listed as archaic.
Right.
And it could also be loading, like an act of baling, dipping, or ladling. A bill of lading is a document issued by a carrier that lists goods being shipped and specifies the terms of their transport.
I think that's actually how I know it, as a bill of lading.
Because
you often... I don't know. I don't know how I know it.
Yeah, I'm calling BS and going, I don't know that any of us are supposed to know this word. That's all I'm saying. I might have even gotten it. I didn't go back and look because I might have guessed random INGs, but I didn't know it. So.
Okay. Well, that one I did know, but dandle I did not know. Another word that I thought was weird that day was another ING word was addling.
Wait, why is that weird? That
because addle is not weird, but I don't generally use addle as a verb. Do you?
Well, I use it as a, yeah, you're right. I would mostly use it as a adjective.
Yeah, me too. Addled. You're feeling addled.
I guess, but it made sense to me. So addling is to make someone unable to think clearly, confuse.
I'm addling them.
Ooh, it's addling weird. Goose eggs.
Addling, what does that mean?
Oh, this is different. So the humane way to limit flock growth and stabilize goose populations is to keep eggs from hatching. In a process known as addling, eggs are treated with corn oil or removed from the nest, which is humane if done at the earliest stages of development. Okay, so I have to tell you, this is from the Humane Society of the U.S. Uh-huh. I love it. It's a little like, you know, like geese abortion. And I'm wondering what the right wing thinks. Want to weigh in, right wing? Isn't a goose a
you
person
know,
from
wait a minute. Inception? You know that right-wing people eat animals, right?
Anyway, so that is not a definition of addling I ever knew. Very exciting.
Very interesting. Dazzling, I might say. I just like the word dazzling, and that was in the puzzle on Thursday.
I was wondering if you knew the word myeloma on May 5th.
I did.
And why do you know the word myeloma?
Multiple myeloma.
Yeah, why do you know that? I mean, I work in medical education, so do things.
I've known people who have had it.
Oh, okay. I was just curious if it was like, I thought that was one of these words that I was like, oh, if I didn't work how I work, I don't know why everyone would have to know this word.
Yeah. But it took me a long time to see it because it's like a weird MYE. Same with myope, which also took me a long time to see. No pun intended.
Ha, ha, ha. Ah.
You know what word that day I thought was really strange?
What?
Molly.
We've talked about this before on this show.
What did we say?
Well, I don't know what we said before. I know that I think of Molly like the drug, which I know is not the point. I also think of Molly like mollycoddle or as a slang, but
it's a fish.
I'm looking on the Oxford Languages, and Molly is a small, live-bearing freshwater fish that is popular in aquariums and has been bred in many colors, especially black.
Yuck. Black mollies, which is not at all how I thought of Molly. And when I looked it up, I was like, what? I don't even know if that's in our fish of the bee list.
I could swear that we've talked about this because it's one of those things that like you guess because it's like, you know, a word you know, you think it's not going to count. And then
maybe we've talked about it. It's totally possible. We've been doing this for a long time. Chances are we're going to talk about things we've already talked about. And chances are nobody's going to remember.
Not everybody has bad memories as we do, Jennifer. Not everyone's as addled as we are.
Oh my gosh. Monday, May 6th. How did you feel about natch?
Oh, like natch. That's what it means, right?
Like naturally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I kind of loved it because like it's a thing.
Oh,
like,
I hate it.
Oh my God. It was totally in like, are you there, God? It's me, Margaret. Like that's what I think.
It was?
That's what I think of that kind of slang being from. Yeah, I think of it as
oh, I think it was such like a bro slang.
Oh, do you think they say it now? I was thinking they say like that this is from like a long time ago.
Like natch. I don't know, but I don't like it. I think it's ugly.
What if it was from like the 70s? What if it is vintage vocab?
I still think it's ugly.
It is from 1942. I just looked that up. All right, we got to ask your mom. I'm excited.
All right, that'll be put on my mom's list.
Anything else we have to talk about?
Well, nothing that we have to talk about, but just, you know, while we're on Monday, May 6th, I just want to say, I think that it's interesting that A, there were henchmen and henchman, but no hatchet man or hatchet men.
Two words?
I think it's two words, but still, yeah. I feel like it should be one word. And also, I was thinking, isn't it weird that we say hatchet, but we say cachet? Like, shouldn't we either say hatchet or catch it?
You got some. Hashay.
Break out your hachet. Make me a house.
It's your forte to have hachet.
Oh, we're going to talk about that. In fact, let's get a move on because I want to get to later in the show so we can talk about our fortes.
Well, I want to get into later in the show so you can tell me about the word of the week. This is the part of our show where we take a closer look at one word from the previous week's puzzles. Jen, I'm ready to continue my B education. What do you have for us?
See, something that our listeners might not know is that before we started to air this podcast, we recorded a never-before-heard episode, a test episode.
We did?
We did. And that test
and then you
episode...
were lazy this week and you picked the same word?
No, hold on. That test episode included a deep dive on a certain word. And I was really bummed that we didn't use that episode. And I have been waiting for the opportunity
to
do a deep dive on this word ever since then.
And this is the first time?
This is the first time that it's both appeared again and I have had the deep dive in my court.
All right, I'm ready.
Ready for those mixed metaphors. The word is lemma.
Lemma.
L-E-M-M-A.
Okay, that's hysterical because I knew that we had talked about lemma, but I didn't know that it was on an episode that didn't count. Huh.
Yeah. I mean, we might have like talked about it in a glancing way on another episode, but we did not do a deep dive on it.
In a glancing way.
It appeared in the puzzle on Sunday, May 5th. I think I just spelled it, but it's L-E-M-M-A. And before I say anything else, I just want to qualify this deep dive by saying that it might be incredibly confusing.
Great.
And if it is, it's because everything about this word is confusing to me.
Right. All right. Well, define lemma first, please.
Well, you would think that's easy, right?
Oh, I would have.
You would have. But lemma has at least two entries in any given dictionary, and it has multiple definitions or senses of what it means. I'm going to start with what I think is the most straightforward of those. This is the use of lemma, L-E-M-M-A, in botany.
Okay.
Now, before we get into it, first you have to understand some things about grass. Grass. Grasses have flowers that grow in clusters. Okay. The structure of one of those clusters is called a spikelet. The spikelet consists of two glumes or outer bracts at the base and one or more florets above.
Mm, not okay. Floret.
Are you following this? This is really clear, right?
I'm just squeezing okay. No floret. Okay, go ahead.
A floret refers to an individual flower. A bract is a type of leaf that grows from the area just below a flower, enclosing the flower and thus protecting the floret's reproductive parts, the pistil and stamens. Do you have a picture of this forming in your mind?
Yeah, kind of. All right. I still don't know how this has anything to do with lemma.
Exactly. Why do we need to know all of this?
Yes.
Because a lemma is the lower of those two bracts in a spikelet. So when you look up lemma and the definition is the lower of two bracts in a spikelet, that means pretty much absolutely nothing.
That is not what I think lemma means.
All right. Well, there are other meanings, as I told you, multiple meanings. The lemma is the lower bract. The upper bract is called the pallia. So basically, they form kind of like a little pea pod almost that opens up that holds the florets, the flower inside. In this case, the word lemma comes from Greek, a word lema, meaning to shell or husk. And that word is related to the Greek word lepein, which means to peel, which incidentally is the same source of the word leper and leprosy.
Interesting. But I'm still curious why you're picking this definition of lemma. But go ahead.
Because this was the most straightforward one.
Okay, but it's not the main definition of lemma.
It is a main definition of lemma in botany. Okay.
Okay.
So basically, it comes from this word to peel, like, and leprosy, peeling skin, I guess, which is pretty gross.
Yes.
So you can start to see that you get this word lemma because the bracts, the lemma and the pallia, act as a shell or a husk that can be peeled back to reveal the floret or the flower inside. Okay. Is that a common word?
No.
No. This is not a common word. So maybe there's another reason that it's included in the B.
Right.
Other than being a technical botany term.
Yeah. That's why I'm still confused, but that's okay.
You may still be asking that question in a minute.
Oh, gosh.
So there is also a mathematics or logic.
Yeah.
Of lemma.
Right.
You are a math person. Do you know what a lemma is in math?
Yeah. It's part of the theorem. So, right?
What part of the theorem?
The auxiliary proposition used in the demonstration of another proposition.
You read out of the dictionary very well.
Yeah, thank you. But, you know, it's part of the argument, right?
It's part of the argument, but it's like a subsidiary part of the argument. You assume to be true so that you can prove something else. There was a good phrasing of this in Wikipedia, which was a generally minor proven proposition, which is used as a stepping stone to a larger result.
Right. So, you need in logic, you need to have the whole process.
Yeah.
Right?
So they're sometimes called helping theorems.
Lemmas. Nice.
Okay. And I said lemmas, but there's another plural for lemmas. Lemmata.
Oh, I wish I had that. Don't you?
And that does not count in the B.
Don't you think it should?
Totally. Especially if lemma's going to count, right?
Yeah.
You know, basically, there's no real distinction between a lemma and a theorem, except that the lemma is sort of a sub-theorem. It's like what you use to get to the theorem. But apparently there is a debate in mathematics over what is better, a lemma or a theorem. So like, is it better and more prestigious to like come up with a lemma or a theorem?
Okay.
What do you think?
Theorem. Now lemma. Lemma. Now theorem. Okay.
So a lot of people think it's better to come up with a lemma because a lemma can be used to prove a whole bunch of different things.
Right.
But a theorem, it's like you prove the theorem and you're done.
Right. I gotcha.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like a dead end. So there's this Rutgers math site where there's an opinion piece that was written by someone named Doreen Zeilberger. It's called A Good Lemma is Worth a Thousand Theorems.
Aw, how cool is that?
This is from 2007. I'm going to quote it. Theorems are nice, but they're usually dead ends. A lemma may be trivial or easy to prove once stated, but if it is good, its value far surpasses even the deepest theorems.
Oh, yes.
And then the writer goes on to talk about their favorite lemma, and somebody else added another quote from a guy named Paul Taylor that says, lemmas do the work in mathematics. Theorems, like management, just take the credit.
Uh-huh. As a member of management, I don't like it.
So that was interesting. And other thing that's interesting about this form of lemma, it actually comes from a different root than the lemma in botany does. This one comes from lemma in Greek, which means something assumed, and it's related to the Greek word lambanein, which means to take. Something taken or received, an argument that's taken for granted, to take. And it also is where we get the word dilemma.
Ah, that's what I was wondering, if lemma's in there because it's part of like dilemma.
Well, I don't know, because it's not dilemma, it's lemma.
It's kind of the same idea, like you have to make a decision.
Right. Well, so a dilemma originally meant like double proposition, right? Like there were two different ways that you could take.
Right.
And did you know that in addition to the plural of dilemma being dilemmas, you can also have dilemmata.
Dilemmata? What's that?
That's multiple dilemmas.
Oh, I like
that's
it.
That's also
cool.
The plural, just like lemmata, dilemmata.
Oh, all of this should count.
Right? Totally agree. So I'm not a math person. I didn't really know the math lemma. But I also didn't really know the third meaning of lemma, which as a word person, I feel like I should have known. Do you know that meaning of lemma?
No, I have only seen two definitions, and honestly, I only knew the math one. So.
Okay. So in the dictionary, you will also find lemma meaning, and this is from Collins. One, an argument, theme, or subject, especially when indicated in a heading. Two, a word or phrase that is glossed, and glossing is like when you notate something. Also, a head word. So a head word is the word that you find in the dictionary. When you go to the dictionary, you look up a word. If you're like, what does running mean? Are you going to look up running?
No, I'm going to look up run. Is that the head word?
Exactly. That's the head word.
Got it.
Okay. So the lemma is that head word. It's like the dictionary form of the word. And it's the stand-in for all the different inflections or variations of the word.
Okay.
So all of those different variations of the word and inflections of the word together share a meaning, and they are called a lexeme.
Mm-hmm.
So running, run, ran are all part of the lexeme. They all mean the same thing with different inflections. But we choose one of those words, in this case, run, to be the lemma, which is the head word.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So there are some conventions about how we choose what the lemma is, but it's also kind of arbitrary. But like if it's a verb, it's usually whatever the infinitive is. And if it's a noun, it's usually like the singular neutral version. And in languages where you have like a lot of different either declensions or endings, like you have masculine and feminine and stuff like that, it gets more complicated, you know, what's chosen. In any case, the process of choosing the lemma has a name, and it is called lemmatization.
Oh, I like that.
With an S.
Okay.
Or a Z. Maybe I must have been reading a British article. With an S or a Z. Lemmatization is the process of grouping together different... I'm quoting this from an article called techtarget.com. Lemmatization is the process of grouping together different inflected forms of the same word. It's used in computational linguistics, natural language processing, and chatbots. Lemmatization links similar meaning words as one word, making tools such as chatbots and search engine queries more effective and accurate. So, the goal of lemmatization is to reduce a word to its root form, or lemma. This is applied in computational linguistics and computer programming by like artificial intelligence and all kinds of, you know, algorithms. Because if somebody's putting in a word, in order to actually fully understand the context, they have to figure out what it's related to and what other words are in that lexeme to like pull up all the possible scenarios of that word.
Okay.
So basically, AI would not function without lemmatization.
Okay, cool. Does lemmatization count?
Lemmatization? Does it have
many words?
No, it has too many letters.
Ugh,
I know.
Bummer.
It is a bummer. But that is lemma. All of that I find to be really interesting. However, I still am not entirely sure that lemma should count, particularly because I believe that lexeme does not count.
Sam, we want to know why you decided to count lemma, which of the definitions you like, and everything else you're thinking. But Jen, thank you for educating us, because that really was way more of an education than I expected to get.
Or wanted.
No, it was good. It was really good. It almost counts as an unbelievable word, Jen.
It almost does.
Let's do it. Let's get to that part. It's unbelievable words.
Unbelievable words are non-B words, usually, that we've come across in other parts of our lives and want to quickly share.
Gens tend to be ostentatious in nature.
Glorious, I'd say. Florid. Grandiloquent. Orchidaceous.
As I said.
I'm kind of like the Met Gala of vocabulary.
That was a good one. I like it.
Or should I say Met Gala, according to Reader's Digest.
All right, Jen, what do you got this week?
My word this week is...
Better be florid.
Dipnosophist.
What is it?
Dipnosophist.
Diagnosophist? Diagnosis?
Dipnosophist. D-E-I-P-N-O-S-O-P-H-I-S-T.
I think you can't say it. I don't know what it means. What is it, Jen?
This is a person skilled in table talk. An adept conversationalist at a table. So it's basically like a good dinner guest.
Okay. So wait.
Yeah.
Say the word again.
Dipnosophist.
Okay.
And
all right.
I was thinking people who listen to this podcast must end up being dipnosophists. Right? We give so much good like cocktail party fun facts. Like if you listen to the show and then you go to a dinner party, you're going to be a hit.
So I don't know about you, Jen, but I actually do that all the time. Like I really do. I always
so
am
do
like
I.
saying things to people that I got from the show that we say.
Yeah. And aren't people always inviting you to dinner?
What I was just about to say is I do it all the time and I don't think anyone is ever interested. I tend to like just bore people with facts and they're like, yeah, I don't care.
I think it must be in your presentation. Maybe you're not being orchidaceous enough it because when I talk about this stuff at a dinner party, all ears are on me.
All ears are on you.
See, what is your word today?
My word is forfend, F-O-R-F-E-N-D. Yeah. So this word was the word of the day in Merriam-Webster on May 2nd. Mm-hmm. And this word, forfend, basically is only used in one phrase, which is heaven forfend, which I never heard of. Huh. But it means the exact same thing as heaven forbid.
Heaven forfend. Who says that?
Apparently, people. It's a little bit vintage vocab. It's a little bit old-timey. Uh-huh. And they said, did you know that forfend is an unusual word in that its most commonly used sense is considered archaic? And it survives in English in like these weird uses like heaven forfend.
And do you think it's like a geographic thing? Like people in a certain region say heaven forfend?
I do not know. Like they have it printed in a New Republic article from May 22, mm-hmm. right? So it's in the lexicon, but yeah. a weird word.
It's pretty wild.
I like the wild card. In the wild card, we get crazy.
And talk about crazy topics like housekeeping.
Oh, excellent. Listeners, if you haven't heard us do housekeeping before, this is where Jen clears up many of the mysteries we've left unresolved from previous episodes.
And I do appreciate that you said that I clean up everything.
I totally did not try to take any credit for doing anything when it comes to housekeeping. Right. I do enough housekeeping in my own house, even over Mother's
Day. Fair. Let's talk housekeeping.
All right.
Let's start with last week. Last week, we opened up the show talking about a swarm of bees that stopped a baseball game at Chase Field.
Bees stopped a baseball game?
Yes. A whole colony of bees apparently got on the net over the field. And they had to stop the game for over an hour. I think close to 2 hours.
So wait, like were the bees attacking the players?
No, they were just there. And I don't know why that meant they had to stop the game, but it did. And it seems that this is not the first time that this has happened, not there, but at other places that bees have stopped games.
So bees like nets? Is that the deal? Are they like hot dogs and Cracker Jack? Like what's
think they like bee ball.
And you didn't have to do any work for this housekeeping.
I didn't, actually. Our superstar listener, Sarah, stepped up to the plate. To explain what was going on with the bees. So I'm going to read an excerpt from the email that she sent us. Okay. Quote, "My understanding is that when hives are doing well, the bees create a new queen. Then the old queen leaves the hive and all the bees go with her. She chooses a new place and they start a new hive. But while they're doing this, they form a ball of bees around the queen. They're pretty placid in this phase. So it happens all the time. At the Indian Wells tennis tournament in March, a swarm came onto the court and were all over the spider cam above the court. Carlos Alcaraz?
Oh my God. Do you not know who Carlos Alcaraz is?
No.
My God. He's like the most exciting young tennis player like in the world.
Sorry. Okay.
Carlos. Won the US Open. Anyway.
Carlos Alcaraz.
Djokovic.
The most exciting young tennis player in the world. And the umpire got stung, but only because they were swatting at the bees.
Yes.
Sarah was watching it live and she said it was just crazy. And she sent a video, which we will be sharing on social media.
Thank you, Sarah.
Yeah. She also told us that when the beekeeper comes, because I was saying that I hope the beekeeper didn't kill them. Well, we didn't know if it was a real beekeeper. And I was afraid whoever came to remove them killed them. She said when the beekeeper comes, the beekeeper vacuums the bees with a special tool and takes them away in a box and then sets them up in a new hive.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, and she also told us that a friend of hers wrote a children's book about that whole process called Honeybee Rescue. So check out Honeybee Rescue, published by Penguin Random House. Very interesting. Yeah. So yeah, thank you, Sarah. And since we're talking about bees, I thought we could go back and clear up a little mess that we made way back in season 2, episode 5, when we got back from Greece and said this.
We had no idea when we planned this trip to Greece months ago that we were headed into the bee capital of the world.
Seriously, there were bees everywhere, like actual bees that tried to eat our lunch.
It is not true that Greece is the bee capital of the world. What is the actual bee capital?
There's not one bee capital of the world.
Well, is that what you think?
Because I'm a reasonable person.
I'm going to tell you what I learned. Oh, Orland, California is the birthplace of hundreds of thousands of queen bees each year, and it is called the Queen Bee Capital of North America.
Whoa, where is this magical place in California? And are we going on a road trip?
Maybe, but where we do not want to go to a road trip is Hidalgo, Texas, which is the self-proclaimed killer bee capital of the world.
No, I do not. But where is that beautiful place in California? Do you know?
That is Orland, California.
But where is that?
I have no idea.
Oh my God. All right, hold on.
This wait, is why there's another place.
You need lemmas, Jen. All right.
There's another place that you might want to do a road trip to.
Okay.
It's in Alberta, Canada. And they have it's called the honey capital of Canada. And they have a 23-foot long statue of a bee.
Oh, well, you know, I do want to go to that place in Canada because I do like Western Canada. Mm-hmm. I'm now curious about Orland. Orland is on I-5, so up from Sacramento, just south of Redding, which is kind of that middle California, interesting, near Lassen Volcano National Park, which I did not know exists. Just a little south of Shasta, which is wonderful. I wonder how far this is from Yosemite. I'm planning a trip, Jen.
How far is it from Santa Cruz?
Let's see. 4 hours in crazy traffic right now. So maybe even less. Doable.
Doable. Okay. We might be doing that for my birthday.
Party. This is how you really get crazy. Okay.
It's the wild card after all. And I'm not even done telling you everything about bee capitals yet.
Okay. I'm looking for spas in Orland while you talk.
Do they have a spa where you like are covered with bees?
Shouldn't it be?
It feels like it should be. India has the largest number of beehives, around 12.2 million.
That kind of tracks, doesn't it?
Yeah. I will also tell you that the U.S. has the most bee species, according to the first global map of bee distribution from 2020.
Mm.
So the U.S. could be called the bee capital.
Okay.
However, Slovenia is on its way to being the bee capital of Europe. And I'm going to quote you.
I do want to go to Slovenia, don't you?
Yeah, from this article called What Slovenia Could Teach the World About Saving Bees that was in Time. And it's, quote, beekeeping is a way of life. In this small European nation of 2 million, one out of every 200 people is a beekeeper.
Oh, very cool. Mm-hmm. Didn't I send you that New York Times thing that said people need to stop keeping bees?
Yeah, we're going to get into that some other time.
Okay, okay. Oh, that's house. That's like later house.
No, because we haven't even talked about it at all. That's like new material.
When's the bee lady coming? Oh, my God.
We're working on it. Everybody, we're working on getting a bee person to come talk about real bees.
So many things.
We have some potential people, but if you know someone who their forte is bees, send them our way.
Okay.
And I said forte on purpose because last week we were doing a Reader's Digest pronunciation quiz and we had this conversation.
I would say forte. I would say this is your forte.
That's what I would say.
They say that
as well.
E is silent, that it's fort. Oh, that was
actually
I don't
believe
helpful.
That that's true. It says forte is correct only if you're using it as a musical term. I don't believe them.
Which is true, too, like mezzo forte.
I don't believe them. I've only ever heard people pronounce that word as forte. All right. So I still say it's forte. What do you say, C?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Eleanor, yet another of our superstar listeners, wrote to us and agreed with us, which I appreciated, forte. And I went to Merriam-Webster. Interestingly enough, Merriam-Webster has a whole little thing on how to pronounce forte.
Really?
Yes. They said, in forte, we have a word derived from French that in its, quote, strong point sense has no entirely satisfactory pronunciation. Usage writers have denigrated forte and forte because they reflect the influence of the Italian-derived forte. Their recommended pronunciation, fort, however, does not exactly reflect French either. The French would write the word le fort and would pronounce it more similar to English for. So you can take your choice knowing that someone somewhere will dislike whichever variant you choose. All are standard, however. In British English, forte and fort predominate. Forte and forte are probably the most frequent pronunciations in American English.
Gotcha. And where do we live, Jen? America!
America!
All right. Anyway.
First time I ever agreed with you on saying that.
Very good. All right. You got one more?
I do. Earlier this season, season 5, episode 10,
yes.
KPOC and other bee trees, we had this conversation about the plural of puli. You know, I'm a big fan of the puli, right? P-U-L-I.
That's
the dog that looks like a mop.
Okay.
And I had no idea about this, but somebody online, Jonathan M. on Facebook, posted, and I looked it up, so it's true, that the plural of puli is pulik.
Really? Why?
P-U-L-I-K. And that could have been in the B, but it didn't count.
Oh, that's so weird. So why is pulik the plural of...
I have no idea. I have never seen another word that has a K as a plural ending.
Okay. Do you understand how much I want to know why this is the plural?
Okay. Jonathan Madeira, who is the one that posted the original thing about pulik being the plural, wrote us a message. He said, thanks for the shout out, and explained the plural K is because it's Hungarian. And he said, also, if you like the puli pulik, you'll love the commandor, commandorok.
What? Wait, what's a commandor and what's a
I think it's another kind of dog, and I might be mispronouncing it. K-O-M-O-N-D-O-R.
What?
It might be commandor. Hold on. Let's see.
This is another Hungarian
dog? Yeah, another Hungarian dog. It kind of looks like a puli, but it is...
Wait, that's a puli. That looks just like the puli.
Is it the same as a puli?
Well, let me say this. The picture of it is the picture of the puli.
Okay, it's called a commandor. The plural is either commandors or commandorok. And it's any of a breed of large, powerful, shaggy, shaggy-coated white dogs of Hungarian origin that are used to guard sheep. Now, and they do look exact. It looks like a puli, so they maybe a puli is a kind of commandor?
I wonder. So I have an answer
to this question right here. We don't even have to do later housekeeping.
Ooh, okay.
The puli is a small, medium breed of Hungarian herding dog.
The commandor is a larger breed.
Similar looking larger breed.
And both of them have. Hey, so commandoc? What did you say the plural was?
Commandorok.
Commander.
Yeah. So I looked up Hungarian plurals, and you either add a K, an AK, or an OK. There are what are called vowel harmony rules. So depending on which vowel it is, it takes one of those endings.
Okay. I have to say again, this seems like, of course, sure, because it's a Hungarian name. And I see that it's not capitalized here, but you're like, but this, it's a Hungarian word.
But
not
that's what
English
we call
word.
Them in English.
I hear you. I'm still a little bit like, like the other day, Labrador didn't count.
Right, because capital.
Great. Why is that capital? But a pulley, which is a Hungarian word and not even an English word, isn't.
Like I don't know. I can't tell you. I don't know.
Anyway, I know this isn't part of how.
No, it's okay. I do want to do one more, see, because this is from last week.
Okay.
Because we had that conversation about warts and all when you did worry wart.
Oh, yes.
And we were trying to figure out like what the deal was since it was attributed to Oliver Cromwell, but the time frame was wrong.
If you look up wart on Etymology Online, they say warts and all is from 1763, supposedly from Oliver Cromwell's instruction to his portrait painter.
See that? Which is funny, though, because Oliver Cromwell was in the 1600s.
1763.
He was dead in 1763.
Hmm. So then that would make this...
But it's possible that it was written in a book somewhere in 1763.
Now you ask lots of questions
saying that Oliver Cromwell said that.
See, I didn't know that timing, though it makes sense.
So it is possible that it was written then.
Interesting.
That he said.
Huh, yeah. So I don't know.
So I did look that up. And as I suspected.
As I'm a genius know-it-all.
Whether or not Oliver Cromwell actually said this or wrote this is completely, you know, nobody knows.
Sure.
But it was recorded in 1764. By Horace Walpole, who was an English art historian, antiquarian, and other things, in Anecdotes of Painting in England, where he quoted Mr. Lely, I desire you would use all your skill to paint your picture truly like me and not flatter me at all, but remark all these roughnesses, pimples, warts, and everything as you see me. Otherwise, I will never pay a farthing for it. So that's what Walpole said that Cromwell said. Obviously, that doesn't even actually say warts and all, but it's the gist of it. And, you know, most people think it's probably apocryphal, but there you have it. Warts and all.
Nice, 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 Jen. Thank you for all the housekeeping. Everything seems nice and clean right now.
My pleasure.
And that's it for this episode of Tom Tit and Baobab.
Thanks for being with us. We hope you'll do it again next week. We drop a new episode every Monday.
In the meantime, be in touch. You can connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, or email us at tomtittandbaobab@gmail.com.
We want to know all about the bees you like, bees you hate, words you missed, words you'd like to know about, and how you celebrated Beatrice's birthday last Thursday.
Jen, that might not have happened for everyone.
Fine. Tell us about how many years you've been doing the bee in the paper or online, or what you did for Mother's Day, or whether you would adopt a pulley or a commodore first.
Oh, I would say pulley because those commodores are cool, but that would be hard. I mean, both of them would be hard dogs to have with all that hair, but they are cool.
Yeah. And you can clean the floor with them.
Yes, and you probably would every day. If you like T&B and never want to miss an episode, subscribe or follow us.
Even better, leave a rating or a review. This helps other word nerds and puzzle lovers find our very indie podcast.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.